You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Lauren Markham is an immigration reporter who was covering the stories of unaccompanied children at the southern border in 2012. At the same time, Lauren is also a student program manager at Oakland Unified School District, working with refugee kids at Oakland International High School, where there's a large number of undocumented students. In her book, The Faraway Brothers, she follows the story of her students, the Flores brothers, on their journey from El Salvador to Oakland. She explores how they're navigating the legal system, immigration laws, and just being in a new country. I chatted with Lauren Markham, and she says it all started with the first article she wrote back in 2013 about migrant children stuck at the border.
I wrote another article that came out in 2014, and right when that article was about to come to press, a coworker walked into my office and said, hey—
Back in Oakland International,
yeah, in my office at the school, and said, it's my friend Mr. David, a math teacher, and he came in and said, hey, we really need to do something about all of these young people at our school who have court dates. You know, all these kids have deportation dates coming up, and none of them have lawyers, and I don't understand much about what's going on, but something's up, and they need support. And he's like, my job is to go teach math, so I'm going to go do that. And your job is to coordinate community programs. So can you figure this out? He sort of bell rang. He goes off to his class. And I was sort of sitting there dumbfounded because while I had been researching this issue all around the country, a number of these young people who were unaccompanied minors had showed up and enrolled at our school. And of course, in the education system, we don't or we should not ask what folks' immigration status is. So we weren't aware. We just knew where they'd come from. We knew a lot about their identities as young people.
But we didn't ask questions about that.
And so it turned out that we had 40 students that spring of 2014. January, February, there were about 40 who were unaccompanied minors. By the end of the year, there were 60. By September, there were 90. And now there are over 130 out of a school of 400.
In your work, you know, after you did all that reporting, you came back kind of to the job of things. At what point then did you say, I want to do something more, which is, you know, write a book about this?
Yeah.
And how did you pick the Flores brothers to tell the stories?
It's, you know, the story of their kind of upbringing in El Salvador, these young men who kind of are born in the wake of the Civil War and come of age in tandem with the rise of the gangs, which is very much like the gang issue in El Salvador is pretty inextricably linked to what happened during the Civil War and the kind of trauma and violence of that era and destruction of that era. So these young men kind of come of age, and they actually have a really nice childhood. They're living in a very poor context, but they describe their childhood pretty idyllically in a way. You know, they're outside a lot, and a really loving family. As they're growing up, right as they're becoming kind of preteens, teens, the gangs kind of start to move into town and kind of get a more and more of a stranglehold on local happenings in the community. The older twin, 12 minutes older, gets on the wrong side of the wrong guy from town, who's actually his uncle. And so the young man, Ernesto, the older twin, he kind of gets into a little misunderstanding and kind of a scuffle with the uncle. And the uncle is convinced that he's done something bad. And so he puts a hit out on him. And they find this out and they sort of try to work it out, but it's not workoutable. So the gangs are going to be after this kid. He leaves the country. And then they realize that because these young men are identical twins, that twin number two is actually quite at risk as well. So twin number two follows him. So they have these sort of separate journeys leaving El Salvador, and they meet up in Mexico City. And on the way, both of them have a really deeply, separately traumatic experience. One witnesses, I mean, without giving too much away, one is beaten and kidnapped and witnesses a pretty horrific rape. And the other one witnesses something incredibly horrific as well, actually up on the border with the United States.
They do end up in Oakland. In kind of safety, right?
Yes.
They get to safety. They find a program. They find a school.
Yeah. And they're with their older brother.
Right. And they come here to their older brother. And now you're telling their story.
Yeah.
What do they say they want you to tell about their story?
Finding a lawyer for them was a huge stress. And they wanted people to understand how hard that is. You know, in the United States, in the criminal system, if someone cannot afford a lawyer, the government provides one. But that's not true in the immigration system. So even though we know that you're much, like five times more likely to win your immigration case, lawyers are not provided, and not even to children. So I've seen little kid. I mean, I was in the San Francisco Immigration Court about a year ago, and there was a 5-year-old kid who had to walk up by himself in front of the judge, you know. So the little boy comes up. So there's an advocate of the day who's not their attorney, but the advocate kind of like, so the advocates of the day in the San Francisco court can't take on the case because they don't have the capacity, but they are kind of there to make sure everything's kind of going okay. So the advocate kind of shoos the little boy up to the front. Little boy's sitting there, and then the judge says, well, has someone accompanied this young man? And the translator translates, and the woman in the back raises her hand and said, yeah, I'm his stepmother. And so she walks up through the pews, and he said, okay, well, you can come sit with this little boy because I just really want to make sure everyone feels comfortable in this court, and I don't want a young man of this age by himself without anybody if there's someone here who can support him. I know he'll feel much more comfortable. And I found myself actually doing what your face is doing. Like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, I don't want to project what your face is saying, but I found myself being like, that is so sweet and so kind. And then I found myself being like, wait, what? This is like the most basic thing, right? And just having been in that courtroom for only half an hour, how much my mindset had already changed towards seeing what was just like an act of basic human decency as this like act of great mercy, you know?
Do you feel that's happening to us,
yes,
though, as a society?
Like, doesn't it feel like that?
It does.
Yeah.
Like, we're normalizing,
yes,
things that should not be normalized.
Exactly. Exactly. And how quickly, frankly, we do that. You know, if that could happen to me in an hour, having like, you know, studied all of the, like, and partially maybe the fact that I was more studied on it made me understand how much his action was maybe an outlier. But again, that shouldn't be, I appreciate that move, but he doesn't deserve the Nobel Peace Prize, you know, for that. And I think we're absolutely doing that as a society when we're hearing these stories and seeing these stories of brutality. I mean, that's happening with police brutality. That's happening with brutality against immigrants. That's happening here in the Bay Area. How many of us have stepped past people's homes living on the street, right? Like, this is what happens with injustice. And so I guess back to your original question of like, I don't know that the twins put it quite this way, but I think that they really felt like they wanted people to understand their stories because they knew that a lot of what was happening to them and to their fellow students and friends was deeply unfair and scary and not okay. And they wanted people to know about it.
How are they now?
They're good. They're good. They're definitely rooting. And I mean, they're still, I think it will be a long process of rooting, but I think they feel more rooted and more comfortable than ever. They have more steady jobs, which is good. They've sort of developed a deeper and more connected community here in the Bay Area. So I think they definitely, I don't think this is quite home yet, but it's not this sort of foreign, scary place that it was for a while for them.
Lauren Markham is author of The Faraway Brothers. You can catch her at this year's Bay Area Book Festival. Find out when she's on the schedule at klw.org.